America must remain the leader of the free world. In the nearly 50 years since World War II, American leadership and American strength have been tried and tested many, many times, but we have come through each time. What happened in the Freedom Revolution of 1989 was largely a product of our leadership and the free world's resolve. A new era of hope is dawning, an era created out of your sacrifice and out of the values and strength of the free world. There are striking differences between this new era and the old one it is replacing. In the old era, NATO stood as the bulwark against Soviet invasion of Western Europe. In the new era, we are discussing the cooperation of our NATO allies in the ongoing crisis in the Middle East. Many of our NATO allies now are answering the Desert Shield call to arms. In the past, Soviet leaders moved relentlessly to create and exploit crises in the name of ideology. Today, Soviet leaders work with us to help stem the crisis in the Middle East. In the past, the Security Council of the United Nations would be in a hopeless stalemate over any crisis. This time, the vote of the Security Council was 13-0 for sanctions against Iraq, 15-0 to condemn Iraq's restrictions on innocent civilians. The Arab Council, NATO, the Western European Union all joined together in saying no to Iraqi tyranny. So we are moving into a new world. But in this new world, there will still be a need for American leadership. President Bush reminded us only last week that we're in a new era, one full of promise. But events of the past 2 weeks remind us that there is no substitute for American leadership. And American leadership, he went on to say, cannot be effective in the absence of America's strength. And we must put that strength where American interests dictate. We must have forces in Europe, in Japan, in Korea, and in the Persian Gulf. We must have superior naval forces in waters that are crucial to our economic interests and the interests of our allies. We must have contingency forces here in the United States, forces that are ready for any crisis. And to deal with what I described as the enduring reality of Soviet strategic nuclear weapons, we must maintain capable, modern nuclear weapons of our own. So we need the B-2 bomber. We need to continue to modernize the sea and land-based legs of our nuclear triad. And we need to continue vigorous research into the Strategic Defense Initiative. These systems are very, very expensive. I know that. I know how expensive they are, but I also know it is a necessary investment in order to preserve our security. No Soviet leader, now or in the future, must ever be allowed to believe that he could blackmail America with superior nuclear weapons than our own. So I see our enduring defense needs rather clearly. Modern strategic nuclear forces that defend this nation and its allies, an Atlantic force to protect our interests to the east, a Pacific force to the west, reinforcing forces here in the United States to include a contingency force for the unknown, for the crisis that no one ever expected. And all of this supported by the best research and development program we can put together and by the soundest industrial base we can devise and sustain. And we can build this armed force. We can put the whole package together and keep America safe. And in the process, we can save money. We can do all of this and save money if we have the time to do it. That's what concerns me most. That's what concerns Secretary Cheney the most, having the time to structure the right military for America. Saddam Hussein will pass, crises will come and go, but America's need for strong armed forces will not pass, ever. In the months ahead, Secretary Cheney and I will be fighting to structure this force in the correct way. In the next 3 or 4 months will be very, very critical. The Congress will soon be back and will be forced to make a judgment about the fiscal year 1991 President's budget that is up for their consideration. We need that congressional decision to be the right one. We need that decision to be one that allows us to move prudently rather than precipitously toward a smaller but even better force. What President Bush has asked for in his budget is what America needs for its protection. If we get a decision out of our Congress that won't allow for what we believe America needs, a decision that cuts too much, too soon, out of our armed forces, then we'll be unable to structure the kind of proud, ready armed forces that our nation will need in the years ahead. Remember, our armed forces are all volunteer forces. All those volunteers are under contract. All are ready to do what is required to serve their country. These are the people who will continue to protect America and her interests around the world. These are the people who believe in America just as you do. These are people who are willing to sacrifice and serve just as you did. But if we cut too sharply, if we cut too deeply, we'll lose those people. We'll destroy the finest military America has ever fielded in time of peace. Some of the fine young volunteers you've seen in the desert on television every night will be forced to fire when they come home. We can't let that happen. And we must also not destroy the great team we built of our active and reserve components. Yesterday, President Bush announced a selective call-up of the reserves, and he could do that without any hesitation about their quality because they are the very best. The total force policy we have is proving itself in the crisis in the Gulf. We're calling up only selected units, ones that can do special tasks and that are key to sustaining our forces or are crucial to selected areas of support. But we know that we could call up any of these great Americans and their response would be overwhelming. All of the armed forces of America are ready to go and to serve. I want the Congress and the American people to be aware of these facts, and I want you to help me tell the story. I also want them to know that we in the military, my colleagues in the Joint Chiefs of Staff and I, understand that we will get smaller. We can get smaller for the new era we are facing. We will reduce our budget. We know that we must re-examine every program and every organization in the Department of Defense to ensure its relevance to a changing world. But it's a changing, not a changed world. It's a world full still of instability, uncertainty, and danger. It's a world where ready armed forces will continue to be essential. On the cover of your June and July VFW magazine, you featured a montage of symbols from the Korean War, the 10th Corps patch, the Korean Service Medal, the regimental flag of the 5th Marines, an F-86 Sabre fighter jet. Each symbol set by the artist against a background of jagged Korean mountains covered with snow. Your resolution 346, featured in that magazine, declared June 25th as Remembrance Day, the 40th anniversary of the outbreak of the Korean War. On that day, now over 40 years ago, our armed forces were hollow and unready for action. It took the courage and valor of men and women, many here today, to compensate for that failure to pay the peacetime price of freedom. Behind those symbols on your cover were the flesh and blood of American veterans. Our aim should be to see that America never makes that mistake again. Our aim should be to see that America never again has to send its sons and daughters to war unready, poorly equipped, and badly trained. We must never again compensate for lack of readiness with the lives of Americans. President Bush spoke to our armed forces at the Pentagon last week. "It is you," the President said, "the men and women of the Department of Defense who turn words into deeds that transform hope and promise into reality." The President could easily have been speaking to each of you here today. Every one of you in your service helped turn words into deeds. Every one of you here today transformed hope and promise into reality. Now, I ask you to help keep our armed forces strong so that America can continue to lead the way in transforming hope and promise into an enduring reality. Thank you so very much for letting me share this day with you.
General Colin Powell talking before the National Convention of the Veterans of Foreign Wars in Baltimore.
So we will defend our interest. Don't try to scare or threaten us. It won't work. It never has. And especially not threats from Mr. Saddam Hussein. We will always come to the aid of our friends and our fellow citizens. We will not abandon them when they are hostages. And that's what a guest who isn't allowed to leave is, a hostage. No Iraqi leader should think for a moment that we don't have the will or the ability to accomplish what might be required of us. All any Iraqi leader needs to do is look at the history of American valor and sacrifice in the 20th century. There lies all the proof he needs of American will. There lies all the proof he needs of the strength of our arms and our ability to do what is necessary.
And so just moments ago, you hear the words of the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff adding his message to the President of Iraq.